whoever has the guns has the power and makes the rules.
Attack the system.
Welcome to the Attack the System weekly news update. I'm your host, Keith Preston, coming to you from attackthesystem.com. As far as items in the news right now, one thing that is not a particularly consequential issue, but something that's rather amusing, is that it appears George Zimmerman is in the news once again. Apparently George went into hiding after he was acquitted in his murder trial, and he's reemerged as someone who apparently came to the aid of automobile accident victims. When I saw the news report about this, the first thing I thought about is what a surreal experience it would be to be in an automobile accident, and you're trapped in a wrecked car, and all of a sudden to the rescue, here comes George Zimmerman. The world is a strange place. Now, to more serious matters, what I want to talk about today in this news update are several articles that have been posted on attackthesystem.com. So while you're listening to this, you actually may want to go to attackthesystem.com and check some of these articles out. I just put them up this morning. It's Tuesday, July the 23rd. I put several articles online that I think really illustrates the way in which Attack the System is ahead of its time in terms of the development of future radical movements in the United States and perhaps elsewhere. And I don't say that just to be a braggart or anything like that, but I do think that we at Attack the System are doing something rather unique. We are looking ahead to the future and looking towards what a radical revolutionary opposition movement in North America might be somewhere down the road, and breaking away from some of these old political alliances, some of these old paradigms that have outgrown their historical usefulness. And some of these articles that I came across this past week, I think, really illustrate that. One of them actually is a piece that was actually not an article. It's actually an interview that was done with Chris Hedges. Chris Hedges is a left-wing journalist. His credentials as a progressive left-wing writer are unimpeachable. And he's the kind of leftist I like. I criticize the left quite a bit, as everyone who reads Attack the System knows. And, of course, our reasons for doing that are well known as well. But Christopher Hedges is one of those kinds of leftists that really hasn't swallowed the liberal Kool-Aid, so to speak. And there, he does an interview, and I posted the YouTube video of this interview on attackthesystem.com. He's doing an interview where he's talking about how the liberal elite has betrayed the people they claim to defend. You really have to watch the video to get the substance of this. It's a short, about 20-minute long interview that Chris Hedges does. But he talks about how in the United States today, the so-called liberal side of the political spectrum really knows no limits in terms of its hypocrisy and insincerity. Of course, we hear all the standard platitudes coming from the liberal side of the political spectrum about being for the people and the poor and downtrodden and oppressed and all of that. But the insincerity of that is obvious enough. And Hedges talks a little bit about how the Democratic Party is today totally owned by the left wing of the capitalist class. He says that. He quotes union officials who say that at one point he talks about how the pro-democratic party factions of Wall Street, meaning the left wing of the ruling class, and the ruling class, like all other socioeconomic and demographic groups, has its own divisions, and there's a left and right on the ruling class among the ranks of the ruling class, as well as within the broader society, and there is a a faction of the ruling class that's pro-democratic and pro-republican and so forth, and I won't get into the details of how all that breaks down in terms of different industries and so forth competing with each other, but the Democratic Party, as Hedges points out, is wholly owned by the left wing of the ruling class, the left wing of the capitalist class, and the unions, likewise, have simply become stooges for the left wing of the ruling class. And he talks a little bit about how the liberal class has completely abandoned any sincere interest it may have ever had in the poor and the working class, in the socioeconomically disadvantaged. And he talks about why that is, and it's the same thing that I've been saying for years, and that is that the left today, the liberal side of the political spectrum today, is not about class consciousness or class conflict or anything like that. For example, when the conservatives, when people on the rightward end of the spectrum accuse the left of waging class warfare, well, that's really ridiculous within the context of contemporary politics, because the left today is about anything but class warfare. The left today is more, as Hedges points out in this interview, the left today is the party of feminism, of gay rights, of multiculturalism, of left-wing forms of identity politics, and so forth. That is the definitive characteristic of the left today, is its orientation towards those particular things, which in turn tend to have a very middle-class orientation. The Democratic Party, in turn, is owned by the left wing of capital, and then the left wing of the middle class is its primary constituency. And it's great to see someone like Christopher Hedges, like I said, his credentials as a progressive, left-wing progressive, are unimpeachable. And he comes out in this interview and says exactly what I've been saying for a long, long time. So please do watch that interview. It's called "The Liberal Elite Has Betrayed the People They Claim to Defend," an interview with Chris Hedges, well-known left-wing journalist. I posted that video on attackthesystem.com. Now, there's also another interesting article that I came across from the left as well this past week, and that is an article by John R. MacArthur in Harper's Magazine. And he's talking about the way in which the left has also fallen down not only on class issues, but on issues of civil liberties and opposition to imperialist war. This particular article is titled "The Party of Wilson, Wiretaps, and War." And of course, the party that he's talking about is the Democratic Party. And when he's talking about Wilson, he's talking about how it was really Woodrow Wilson, President Woodrow Wilson, who was probably his greatest accomplishment was getting the United States into the First World War and contributing to all of the disasters that came out of that. But this whole idea that we see on the left today of humanitarian imperialism, that is, going to war and invading other countries ostensibly in the name of upholding human rights and democracy and things like that, that kind of thinking really has its roots in the thought of President Woodrow Wilson. And ironically, it was the Wilson regime that probably did the most to suppress the historic left in the United States. During the time that Wilson was the president, his attorney general, Mitchell Palmer, was carrying out the Palmer raids, and they were working diligently to suppress the Socialist Party, the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, the Radical Labor Movement, and all that. So it's interesting that the so-called liberal internationalism, humanitarian interventionism of contemporary times has its roots in the Wilson era, which in turn was a representation of a regime that went out of its way to suppress the radical left, or the genuine left, if you will. So that's another interesting article as well, "The Party of Wilson, Wiretaps, and War," by John R. MacArthur. It's available at attackthesystem.com. And one thing that MacArthur also talks about in here is the need to rally around civil liberties and anti-war issues. And he concludes his article by saying that you know, leftists like, say, Noam Chomsky and conservatives, libertarian conservatives like the Ron and Rand Paul are essentially on the same side of the fence about many of these kinds of issues, and that there needs to be more collaboration between the left and the right around some of these common issues like opposition to aggressive war and opposition to the surveillance state, the police state, the national security state, and all of that. It was refreshing to see John R. MacArthur in Harper's Magazine calling for something like this. And I think his quotes are something like, liberal lambs like Chomsky need to lie down with conservative lions like the Pauls against the surveillance state. And I think it's interesting that so many people on the left have dropped the ball on this issue as well. And once again, I trace it to the same sources as Chris Hedges traces it, and that is that the left today is essentially a middle-class movement. Its primary orientation is towards identity politics and cultural politics. And in the process, it's let everything else slide. It's let the anti-war issue slide. It's let the civil liberties issue slide. It's let the class and economic issue slide. And as a result, what we see is what we have today. We see this ever-encroaching police state, this ever-encroaching third-world model class system and system of political economy, this ever-aggressive military state. So it's refreshing that someone like MacArthur would recognize this. So this two important voices from the left spoke up this week to criticize some of the kinds of things that typically go on the left and that explain why the left has become such a failure. Now, there was an article by Justin Raimondo that was posted on antiwar.com. Why they hate Rand Paul. Why they hate Rand Paul. It was posted on antiwar.com. It's a column this week by Justin Raimondo. Justin Raimondo, of course, is the long-standing libertarian writer who has gone out of his way for many years to revive the isolationist tradition of the old right, the anti-interventionist tradition. And Justin deserves a great deal of credit and recognition for having done that. But in this article, Why They Hate Rand Paul, he's talking about how the establishment progressives and establishment conservatives are essentially teaming up to oppose the growing sympathy for Rand Paul. And it's, of course, Rand Paul is not really my cup of tea at all. I've actually criticized Rand Paul in the past. I think he's far too moderate. I think he compromises with the system far too much. Now, that said, he also gets it right on a lot of things, like his filibuster over the drones issue, and now some of his efforts at opposing the surveillance state. But there's an interesting article by Raimondo where he's talking about how the neocons and the progressive left both are coming out to oppose Rand Paul. And of course, there's some talk of Rand Paul being a potential presidential candidate in the next election in 2016, just like his father was a candidate in the last couple of elections. There's been something of a controversy lately regarding Jack Hunter, one of Rand Paul's former aides. I think he's resigned now. Justin goes into a lot of details about how the left and the right, the establishment left and the establishment right, are out there trying to discredit Ron Paul. What's interesting is that he's talking about Jonah Goldberg, who's the one of the neocon opinion leaders, a writer for National Review Online. One thing that Goldberg raises is he talks about how back in the early 1990s, Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell developed the paleo-libertarian strategy, which was an interesting concept. Murray Rothbard and Lou Rockwell in the late 80s and early 90s had many of the same criticisms of the mainstream libertarian movement as it was at the time that I make of many libertarians today, that I have of the left anarchists and of the the left libertarians today, in that it's essentially a movement about lifestyle politics. It's a movement that's all about, you know, drugs gay rights and animal rights increasingly and issues like that. You know, cultural politics, lifestyle politics, and as a result, that's taken some of the edge off of libertarianism, because, you know, libertarianism in so many camps has embraced some of these trendy liberal lifestyle political issues. They've retreated on the issues of war, and they've really retreated on some of the more controversial and hard-edged aspects of libertarianism or anti-state radicalism. And Jonah Goldberg has come out and once again attacked Lou Rockwell and Murray Rothbard for having developed this paleo strategy. And what the paleo strategy was to move away from this orientation within libertarianism towards lifestyle politics and more towards a harder-edged anti-statism, where foreign policy would be primary, where opposition to an imperialist, interventionist foreign policy would be a primary consideration. And for that reason, they wanted to, Rockwell and Rothbard wanted to reach out to the social conservatives and more traditional working class elements, not just the counterculture, you know, not just bohemian intellectuals of the type that are often drawn to libertarianism. But in other words, they wanted to turn libertarianism into more of a populist movement against big government and big statism and against military imperialism and things like that. And this strategy that Rockwell and Rothbard developed way back in the early 90s has been extremely controversial. It's been an issue in some of the Ron Paul campaigns. But what's interesting about it is that I think that if it hadn't have been for the paleo-libertarian strategy that Rockwell and Rothbard developed all those years ago, there never would have been a Ron Paul campaign. I think the paleo-libertarian strategy that Rockwell and Rothbard developed really became the intellectual foundation of the Ron Paul movement. And it's really out of that milieu that the Ron Paul movement has grown. And what's interesting is that the Ron Paul is really something of a gateway drug to a more radical form of libertarianism. Back when Ron Paul was running for president the first time, back in 2007, 2008, I wrote a series of articles for LouRockwell.com endorsing Ron Paul's efforts. And while Ron Paul, likewise, is not really my cup of tea either. I mean, he's far more of a traditional conservative constitutionalist than I am. I am a revolutionary anarchist. But when Ron Paul emerged as a major political figure, I did recognize that Ron Paul was going to be a gateway drug, that there were going to be a lot of people, particularly a lot of younger people, who would get to the Ron Paul movement, and from there they would discover more radical forms of anti-state thinking, not just Paul's conservative libertarianism, but ideologies like Rothbard's anarchism and other forms of anti-state radicalism that have a harder edge. And that seems to be what happened, that the Ron Paul movement managed to interest a lot of people in libertarianism, and then particularly younger people. And then a lot of those people started to move past that into a more radical point of view. Actually, that's how the libertarian movement in the modern post-war libertarian movement in the United States really got started as well. Back in the late 60s, in the mid 60s, 1964, when Barry Goldwater, just a staunch conservative Republican with some libertarian leanings, was running for the presidency, there were a lot of younger people who got involved with that, and through that they were exposed to libertarians that were involved in that project and started moving towards a more radical system of thought. And then a few years later, in the late 60s, the modern libertarian movement really began to develop. And it's interesting how, and of course, that libertarianism as it was in the late 60s and early 70s had a strong new left orientation. as well as it should. I mean, that was where the action was back then. But it's interesting how in the early 90s, Rockwell, Rothbard, probably Raimondo, and some others managed to recognize that with the Cold War being over, that old-fashioned militarist conservatism was a dead end for any kind of libertarians that wanted to have any kind of influence. And they started looking towards this revived isolationist right that came out of the early 90s, the paleoconservative movement, the Buchanan movement, and so forth. And Rockwell and Rothbard started moving in that direction and developing a form of paleo-libertarianism that would go out and try to connect with the populist right and as well as revive the older American isolationist tradition. And like I said, that seems to have been the basis of what became the Ron Paul movement. And then the Ron Paul movement, like I said, has been a gateway drug that has interested a lot of newer people, a lot of younger people in libertarian ideas, particularly more radical libertarian ideas. So it's great that that's happened. And one thing that Justin Raimondo talks about in this column, why they hate Rand Paul, is how the appeal of someone like the Pauls has spread out beyond merely conservative and constitutionalists and libertarians, that there are some liberal civil libertarians and some anti-war leftists that have started to move towards this kind of paleo right because they're the only ones that are really addressing the issue. It's really just the paleo right and the libertarians that are really addressing this issue of the surveillance state and imperialist war. Like I said, the radical left at this point is practically non-existent. The liberal left is more concerned with social issues and cultural issues and so forth. So the torch has been passed to the paleo right as far as building any kind of serious anti-war movement or anti-police state movement or anti-surveillance state movement. And it's starting to attract the attention of liberals and leftists who are concerned about those issues because they recognize that the left, you know, their traditional constituencies or political demographic has failed so miserably on those questions. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Of course, all of these things that I've mentioned so far, each of these three articles or interviews that I've posted on Attack the System and that I've been discussing in this program, whether it's the interview that Chris Hedges did or whether it's the article by Justin Raimondo on Rand Paul or the article criticizing the Democratic Party by John MacArthur and Harper's, all of those are right in line with what we do at Attack the System. We at Attack the System have long maintained that the left today is simply a movement about cultural politics and lifestyle politics. It's not a serious radical movement. It's not even a serious opposition movement. Of course, at Attack the System, we've always recognized, as long as we've been around, that it's really the paleo right that has started to carry the mantle of the anti-war movement. The left has really fallen down on the job on that as well. And also on the question of the police state and the surveillance state, on all of those issues, you'll generally find that libertarians and paleo conservatives tend to have the most insight and voice the most criticism of some of that kind of stuff. So we see those articles, and then there's another article that I posted as well, and this is an article from the American Conservative by W. James Antle III, and what's interesting about this article is that this particular article endorses a type of libertarian populism. It endorses a type of libertarian populism on economic questions. And ask the question, it asked the question directly, can a movement be anti-government but pro-worker? And of course, that is one of the core issues that we at Attack the System have long addressed. The essay that I wrote that is the most thorough explanation of the whole Attack the System paradigm, at least with regarding to strategy, is called Liberty and Populism, where I'm outlining a framework for a libertarian populist movement that is pro-worker but anti-government and seeks to advance the interests of the poor and working class, as well as the sinking middle class, through attacking all of those state institutions that are holding them back, and all of the state institutions that are under whose boot they are under. What I find interesting is that it's almost like attack the system ideas. The kinds of things we've been pushing for years are starting to seep into the mainstream. Important voices on the left now are starting to dissent from the dominant liberal paradigm, criticize the left for its failures in so many areas. And, of course, that's what we've been talking about forever. It's interesting that a magazine, American Conservative, that is much more mainstream than we are at Attack the System, is now starting to adopt some of our ideas as well. The idea of a movement that is pro-worker and anti-government, a libertarian populism. It's interesting that Raimondo was talking about how a lot of anti-war and pro-civil liberties leftists are now starting to find common cause with the paleo right as well. These are the things that we have advocated for at Attack the System for years. We have always advocated for a libertarian populist approach to economics and class issues, for an alliance of the left and right around anti-war and civil liberties issues. A political realignment that reflects that. If you read the Liberty and Populism essay, or if you read the 10 Core Demographics piece that was posted on Attack the System a couple of years ago, you see that that's what we're all about. These are the ideas that we promote, left and right rapprochement against the police state, against the empire, libertarian populism on economic matters, criticizing the failures of the left, recognizing the achievements of the paleo right, and all of this now is right in line with what we do. So that is a sign that our ideas like ours are making headway into the mainstream society to an ever greater degree. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes. It'll be interesting to see if this kind of thing develops into the kind of movement that we actually talk about at attackthesystem.com and see what comes of it. So please do check out attackthesystem.com, read some of these articles that I've posted, and watch the Chris Hedges video. This is some really interesting stuff. It's right in line with what we do, and it helps demonstrate how the kind of radical philosophy that we advocate for at Attack the System really is the wave of radicalism in the future. So until next time, this is Keith Preston for attackthesystem.com, and have a good week.